Now for another perspective on high-speed rail, we're joined by James Fallows, a national correspondent for The Atlantic. Over the past week, he's authored several pieces about the project as part of his American Futures initiative online at theatlantic.com. James Fallows, welcome to Valley Edition.
Thanks. It's nice to talk to you.
Your project has taken you to just about every corner of the country, and now you're writing about high-speed rail and visiting Central California. You were here a few months ago in Fresno and other places throughout the valley. Why write about this project, and why is it important for a national audience?
I think it's important for a national audience because there is an imbalance in east-west coverage. I'm originally from Southern California. I grew up in Redlands, which is out near San Bernardino in the Inland Empire. And one of the sort of the struggles of my life has been recognizing the national media in which I work are based on the East Coast, but our most populous state, our most economically productive state, gets undercovered in national coverage. So I thought that if the high-speed rail debate were happening along the East Coast corridor between, say, Atlanta and D.C. or something, it would be dominant news. It's a very important project. Whether or not you support it, and I do on balance support it, I think it's one of great consequence and deserves more attention than it's gotten outside the state.
You've compared it to the Transcontinental Railroad, the Erie Canal, in terms of its potential significance. I was reading Stephen Ambrose's wonderful book, Nothing Like It in the World, about the building of the Transcontinental Railroad. That, too, was a project fraught with cost overruns, corruption scandals, mismanagement, political intrigue. How do you think it compares to something like those massive projects?
There are two important realities about any big infrastructure project, even casting that as broadly as the Louisiana Purchase or the Alaska Purchase in the 1800s, which really made America. Certainly the Transcontinental Railroad, the construction of the Golden Gate Bridge, basically any large measure that any democracy has undertaken, two things that have been true. One is that these have always been controversial. Even the Louisiana Purchase, you know, believe it or not, was bitterly criticized at the time. And it's because anything large really does necessarily involve trade-offs and imperfections, and anything involving construction always has there's a possibility for leakage. The other thing that I assert to be true is that usually these things end up having benefits, more benefits that aren't foreseen than drawbacks that aren't foreseen. You know, the dynamic effects of railroads or airports or the Golden Gate Bridge or Louisiana, it is harder, I think it's easier to foresee in the here and now the inconveniences they cause than to imagine 20 or 50 or 100 years from now the sorts of dynamic effects they have. So I, in general, have a bias in favor of these projects because, to me, the historical record suggests that we overemphasize their drawbacks and underimagine their benefits.
You write that you came into this reporting journey generally in support of high-speed rail, and after studying the issue, talking to a lot of people, looking at a lot of reports and studies on the project, you say you're actually now more in support of the project. Why is that?
Yes, and so I'll explain first my starting point and then my evolution. My starting point is I've spent a lot of my life reporting from outside the United States. I lived in China for a long time and Japan and other parts of Africa and Europe. And there you see the transforming effect of some of these big projects. We wouldn't want to make these decisions the way the Chinese do, of just bulldozing people out of the way, literally, and all the rest. But you can see the difference that good infrastructure makes. And if you've been in a place where high-speed rail works, it just is a whole different experience. So I was predisposed to think that if there's a way this can work for California, it's that's worth looking for. As I don't present myself as being a original expert on this. I'm still in the process of interviewing people, but it has seemed to me the most powerful argument is the dynamic one, that if California does not do this, and there are another 10 or 15 million people there over the next generation, the other ways of dealing with the transportation problems, whether it's more roads or just the cost of congestion or more airports or whatever, will be more destructive, as far as I can tell, than going ahead with the rail project.
The challenges of this project and its implementation have been very well documented throughout the media on our station and beyond. Cost overruns, a business plan that has been revised and revised again and revised again, construction delays, legal challenges. One of your critics said something to the effect that if the people at the Rail Authority wanted this project to fail, they couldn't be doing a better job. Can something like this survive what appears to be, at least at the very best, a poorly executed rollout? Can it survive?
I guess we'll see. That's up to the people of my original home state, your current home state. I thought it was interesting. I posted that criticism and also the response from Dan Richard, who, of course, is now head of the High-Speed Rail Authority, who said he made two points. One is he admitted that there had been lots of the problems that the correspondent was mentioning, but he said that with Governor Brown taking it more seriously than his predecessors had, Dan Richard asserted that it was on a different management track, and he had some evidence to back that up. He also pointed out that BART itself, where he was twice the president of the BART board, was at least as imperiled when it was getting going now 50 years ago, when BART was getting started. And again, BART has its problems, I know, as a former writer, but if you imagine Bay Area transport without it, you have a more depressing prospect. So I can't predict as a political reality how this is going to go. My judgment as a political observer is that I hope it goes forward just as a past and I hope future resident of California. I think it'll be better for the state than the alternatives.
If you just joined us on Valley Edition today, we're talking with James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. He has a new series of articles online at theatlantic.com about California's high-speed rail project. A lot of the most strident opposition to this project, at least here in Central California, comes from local farmers and dairymen who say the rail line is going to destroy their business by slicing their properties in half. They say this project will destroy their way of life. Yet you point to some research that you say shows high-speed rail, if done correctly, could actually save farms and farmland here in the Central Valley. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. And again, in my role as reporter rather than original expert here, by talking to people at UC Davis, where a lot of this research has been going on, they're saying that obviously we know that over the last century and over the last generation, farmland in the Central Valley and elsewhere has been chewed up at a ferocious rate. People around Fresno know that as well as anybody else in the state. In my hometown of Redlands, I've seen orange groves give way to development. That land has been chewed up not because of high-speed rail, which hasn't existed, but because of all the other forces we're well aware of in California's development, from suburbanization to freeway development to sprawl of all kinds. The analysis that the people who seem most convincing to me make is that if we look 20 years ahead, 50 years ahead, the land that is likely to be lost in farms because of high-speed rail will probably be much less than the land that would be lost without high-speed rail. If there is more highway construction, if the current sprawl dynamics continue. So they may be wrong in that analysis, but at least they're saying on a dynamic basis, if we look to the California that our children and grandchildren will know, it's likely to be less chewed up if this project goes ahead than otherwise.
There's also a tension here in Central California between urban and rural. We see it in a lot of different issues, and I think we see it here as well. Opponents say that they want this area to stay the same, to remain a largely agricultural area. But others say that our social problems here, the high unemployment, poverty, things like air pollution, all of these problems make staying the same unacceptable. And they cite high-speed rail as a possible solution. Do you see that tension in your travels here as well?
Sure, and that's a tension that is certainly present in California, but is not unique to California. This is a worldwide issue. If you travel in parts of France or Italy or even Germany, people simultaneously want to preserve those areas as having all the virtues which have made them so appealing over the centuries, and yet how are people going to have jobs there, and how are the schools going to be financed and all that? Same thing is happening even in China, where I've been living, where parts of rural China don't want to be paved over the way Beijing and Shanghai are, but they also want to have some of the benefits of prosperity. So this is the California instance of a worldwide tension, and something for which no one has an actual clear balance. I think that the California message over the decades has been situations or circumstances that allow the entire state economy to develop in its educational aspects and its high-tech aspects and its agricultural business and all the rest, and try to preserve the circumstances that make each of them special, will provide the rising tide for the state as a whole. The people in the Central Valley will probably be better off if the state as a whole becomes more prosperous, has more money for schools, anti-pollution, et cetera, et cetera. The question then is, what's the way to best manage this very, very complex equation? I think further freeways through the valley and further sprawl in the valley are probably the worst answer to that. And the question is, what are better answers than that?
Some people talk about California and say the state has been in decline for some time now. It used to be in the 50s, 60s, and into the early 70s that the state was known for thinking big, for its big projects, not only for things like the aerospace industry in Hollywood, but for things like the water projects, the creation of the CSU and UC systems, the freeway system. It's been a while since California undertook anything even remotely close to the scale of high-speed rail. It was before we had the state's landmark environmental laws. Can California still think this big on this grand of a scale?
One reason I'm proud to be originally a Californian and still think of myself that way is that California is the distillation of the American experience, but in a way people don't usually think. We usually think, oh, the styles start there, music or clothes or tech or whatever. I think it's actually the paradox of modern America. The paradox of modern America is we have, in my view, by far the most creative economy on earth, by far the most new opportunities for people. Immigrants come from all over the place. And the problem we have is on public issues, public governance, being able to resolve disagreements and invest in anything that it requires a public presence. California has had the same situation over the last generation plus. When I was a kid in Redland schools in the 1960s, they were very well funded. That's less the case now. California is privately still enormously powerful. Look at the tech industry, the entertainment industry, the agricultural industry. The public realm has been the one with the challenges, and I actually think that it's good that Jerry Brown, in his second incarnation, is pushing rail as a big public thing that would have benefits for the state in the long run. But that's my personal view.
Before we go, one last question. You've been traveling throughout California, throughout the Central Valley as well. You were here in Fresno a couple of months ago and talking to folks at a restaurant downtown and trying to get the feel for the community. Maybe what surprised you or what didn't you expect to find in throughout your travels here in Central California?
So I'm about to start writing a series of articles about a place called Winters up near Davis, which is a walnut and almond community and the way they're trying to deal with environmental circumstances. I guess in the time since I was living in California, I'm newly impressed in the contrast, the wealth and poverty contrast between coastal California and Valley California. And I think that is something which I'd known in concept but hadn't sort of reabsorbed in real experience until sort of driving up and down the valley recently. So I'm going to be out, my wife and I will be out there again soon. We're going to come back to Fresno. We were only there for a day plus before, so we'll be back there for a number of days and talk with you to try to learn about your particular city, which is interesting to us.
Well, it's very interesting. It's all available online at theatlantic.com as part of the American Futures Project. We've been talking with James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for giving me the time.